Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Also, before we begin, I'd like to give a huge shout-out and thank you to the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. So, thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neil Royal, Nick S., and Infamous Fridge for supporting me. If you'd like to help support me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be talking about the loudness factor of commanders in EDH. Effectively, how dangerous a commander can look when you're sitting down to play a game and you're looking at a commander across the table from you, and some of the common misconceptions or regular earned conceptions that we as EDH players might have about popular commanders or more powerful commanders, you know, vice versa, and how we can try to tackle some of those issues, or at least, you know, discuss how the loudness factor of commanders may affect our willingness to play against certain strategies, or also inform our decisions about what to play in response. So, in order to talk about this subject, I have invited a returning guest back to the show, introducing Cole from the Uncommon Commanders podcast. Welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back.
Yeah, so, again, before we get to the rest of today's episode, Cole, can you remind the folks out there what the Uncommon Commanders podcast is all about?
Yeah, sure. So, I'm Cole. I'm the host of the Uncommon Commander podcast, where myself and other guests talk about uncommon legendary creatures that you could and possibly should be using as your commander, some of which I think I might just bring up today every once in a while, because I think that the uncommon legends are pretty cool and have been a nice addition to Commander in as a whole.
Yep, sounds good. And I was on one of your earlier episodes on there talking about Renata Called to the Hunt, which seems honestly like a million years ago when I built and was still playing that.
Yeah, and kind of something that maybe we can kind of string into the start of the conversation. When we discussed Renata on my podcast, one thing we kind of addressed it as a stepping stone of, well, what would you do if you did it again? But at the end of the day, what it really came down to was that Renata, in the grand scheme of things, is not very exciting. And when you see it across in a deck as another player, you might even be surprised or even not know that this card exists. It's because it's, I would kind of say, a one on the quote-unquote loudest scale was something that I think is kind of worth talking about.
Yeah, so now that you've mentioned the loudness scale, let's discuss exactly what we're talking about, shall we? So, as we're defining the loudness scale here, again, with kind of a subjective 1 to 10 rating, I suppose, we're talking about how loud, how, I guess, trying to find the right word here, but how grandiose, I guess, a commander can be based on its abilities, its text box, based upon the strategies that it's most commonly associated with, and just, you know, if it's also more competitive viable. If it's EDH viable, it's definitely a louder card than something like Renata, which is never going to be a top-tier deck. Let's just be honest here. But, and again, that's me saying that, is that I know Renata's never going to be top-tier, but that's still, the point is that a lot of the commanders that you're going to see across the table that are more powerful have that loudness. And again, we're talking about going back to the EDH rec top commanders here. We're talking about things like Kenrith, Atraxa, Korvold, Yuriko, Moldrotha, list goes on, Ur-Dragon, Edgar Markov, Marin, Chulain, Kess. Yeah, the list goes on and on and on and on and on about generically powerful commanders, a lot of which have come out in the last couple of years, honestly, which is a little weird. But a lot of commanders that have just generically, through their abilities, through the things that they are able to do, the colors that they're in, have generically risen to the top and are honestly some of the most popular commanders that are out there. So, and on the other end of the scale, we have a lot of commanders that people basically forget about. Again, using Renata as an example here, if I was to ask you, Cole, how many of the Theros demigods we got in Theros Beyond Death, how many could you reasonably name?
Let me try to do that off the top of my head. Obviously, Renata. We got Annex, who was the red one. We have Daxos, who is the white one. And then we have Temerit as the black one. And then, and this is where, nope, it's Calafi for the blue one.
Yeah, so
So.
yeah, 4 out of 5. But again, I'll bet that since Theros Beyond Death came out, what again seems like a million years ago, that I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who wouldn't even really remember one more than one, honestly, of those five, if you put them out there and just said name the demigods in a similar situation. And I think that's kind of the divide that we have, not just as creators, but kind of as EDH players, is we're always drawn towards the big splashy cards. Every time we see a new set revealed, people tend to gravitate towards the generically powerful cards. A lot of the time, the Simic Legends seem to fall under this category because they just have generic value stapled onto them. But again, we see this in all color combinations. It's whatever the new hotness is that people just gravitate towards too, because it does something different typically than we've ever seen before, and it does it in such a way that you are able to either cheat mana costs or draw a butt ton of cards, or just really be able to make a whole bunch of tokens, tutor things out, etc., 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 rinse, repeat, we're done, right? And we see in the top 50 of EDH Rec just kind of the same things over and over and over and over again. It's value-based. We have a lot of value, we have relevant keywords, we have fairly low mana costs. We don't typically see a lot of 6 and 7 drops in the command zone of these top 50. Again, Morrowind kind of falls under a lot of these categories, but again, Morrowind's a little different. It still cheats the mana cost, etc., etc. So you kind of see a lot of similarities between these top commanders. Not necessarily because of what's in the text box, but kind of what they promote is kind of what we as players would consider a lot of broken strategies, a lot of very well-known, very powerful synergies that these cards really promote. And again, on the other end of the spectrum in the loudness scale, we look at things that are, at least a thousandth on EDH Rec or less, let's say. And these are cards that have very niche strategies, maybe a lot of older cards that maybe don't necessarily do generically powerful things in EDH, and therefore, if you were to sit down across from one of them, there's a very good chance you might not actually know what that card does or what's even in the 99 of someone's deck. Again, I'm going to utilize my, for the sake of comparison here, I'm going to utilize my example of Najeela, let's say. I knew I wasn't going to say much about Najeela before the show here, but again, for everyone who doesn't know, I do run a Najeela the Blade Blossom deck, but I run only colorless lands in there as kind of a personal challenge. But if I was to build that regularly, as most people would build Najeela, that is pretty busted powerful. It is one of the most consistent EDH decks from what I know, and just any kind of Najeela deck is very powerful. On the other end of the spectrum, you'll end up with, again, Renata, which I built, which really didn't scare anyone. And you end up with other commanders that I've built that, they just don't seem frightening at all. And you can utilize that to your advantage. But I kind of wanted to hear, Cole, what are your thoughts on the loudness scale? And how do you think that we can utilize this as deck builders to try to figure out if we want to build a certain commander or if we'd rather find something a little bit more conspicuous if we want to do that same strategy?
So, here's how I feel about this, and I want to preface this that as playing Magic and as many Magic and Commander players, it's a very subjective thing at the end of the day. I do think that there are legendary creatures that have been printed that are just like out and out a full 10 on the loudness scale, and everyone knows what a typical deck of with that legend would be like. Obviously, there's the nuance of, well, what does the player do specifically with that deck? Do they power it down, like you said, with your Najeela deck, where you kind of put this unique twist on things that powers it down in a certain way, and probably raises some eyebrows when you kind of have that casual rule zero and be like, hey, this is what how I built the deck, and this is what it's gonna do, and you're not gonna see anything super crazy. But as you kind of said, you kind of mentioned a few of the legends on EDH Rec as sort of like the top 100 of the best of the best. The thing about the statistics side of it is that it's also very misleading. Obviously, if you look at like Kenrith, you can understand why it's as wildly popular as it is, and why it's possibly the helm of a lot of really powerful five color decks. But if you kind of go further down on this list of other popular legendary creatures, they don't necessarily scream out that they're the quote unquote strongest commanders with boasting the strongest deck strategies. Some of them have been popular for a long period of time, and it's just that sort of casual popularness and sort of possibly a ambiguity of what's the best way to build the deck that allows them to kind of sit possibly in the middle of the loudness scale of maybe being a 5, 6, or 7. Good, but their popularity is only because they just do functionally okay or good things.
Okay, yeah, that actually does seem fair. I know I probably overreact a little bit, but again, it's one of those situations where you can kind of tell what these popular commanders are going to be when they come out in a new set. Obviously, we have gotten all the Crimson Vow previews. The set's dropping this week, or this weekend, at least for pre-release, and there's been a lot of discourse about certain commanders out there being the hot stuff. And then there's a lot of legendaries that kind of fall through the cracks. And those commanders that are very popular when they first come out, those are probably going to end up in these top ranks at some point because they just have that generic value. They do very good things. You can put 99 cards in that are, not considered to be format staples, which is something I do try to do in some cases, and you can still have a very solid deck. I mean, honestly, I'm looking straight at Feather of the Redeemed right now. Gives Boros a commander to be able to utilize a whole bunch of silly combat tricks and whatnot, which is something that you could do before, but you didn't really have an outlet before this to really be able to capitalize on a lot of those pieces. So really gives an existing archetype a new bent, I suppose, and you don't have to put in the best cards in those colors to that deck. You can just run every kind of common that gives +1, +2, et cetera, and it's still generically good. If you put that in a commander deck that didn't have those necessarily kind of synergies, it's effectively 99 cards, which doesn't mean it can't be that way, I guess. But what I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that there are just some commanders that just give you more value for doing the same thing versus their peers that do other things. We see a lot of like tribal synergies, for instance. I'm looking at Gishath, Sun's Avatar, Lathrul, right, at least right now when I'm looking at EDH Rec. And there are other options for these kinds of strategies, but these commanders are very popular because they do something above and beyond what other commanders in those tribal archetypes are able to do. Lathrul, especially, we have a lot of different elf commanders that do things in these colors. But Lathrul, again, being in the pre-con also helps. But also being able to do a whole bunch of different things, having that filled text box right there, that kind of sets that card apart from a lot of the other elf commanders we've seen before. And I think that really, just that filled text box really gives you that ability to lean into one thing or another. But again, it's that generic value, it's that loudness that you see a lot more of these decks because people are wanting to build them. But I feel like there's also the floor is higher in a lot of cases, is that unless you're actively trying to bring your level of optimization of efficiency down, more likely, I would say your Lathrul deck is probably going to function better than if I was to just choose some random commander in the same colors and do Elf Tribal, or something else in those same colors, doing a similar strategy, but maybe I'm not getting that same amount of value. So I guess the way I look at loudness is how much potential is there in that commander to do something generically powerful, and then, how likely is the person playing that deck going to be doing the quote unquote most powerful strategy? Again, those the top strategies you're going to see on EDH Rec, for instance. How often are you going to see someone play, I guess, with the grain versus what I try to do, which is typically go against the grain. I guess that's my question when I first sit down and I see someone playing one of these top 50 commanders, let's say.
Well, and the other thing too is that if we're talking about, because you know, let's see how Magic has been changed, not just mechanically from the game standpoint, but also socially, whether that be we're enfranchised players online, even here, you know, going through Discords and online forums and all this other stuff, and then just the regular consumer who might be so completely disconnected from it that they literally bought a precon of let's say Lord Windgrace, and that's their deck, right? You know, and this is where the subjectiveness of sort of the loudness scale comes to play. Where it's like, on one hand, we play Commander because we want to have a face card that guides how the deck is going to play. So obviously, sometimes if you play your favorite color combination, or you're trying to play your favorite kind of archetype, whether that be control, aggro, mid-range, and so on and so forth, you want to play a really sick, cool combo, you want to pick a general that matches the goal. And but at the same time, as individual players, you know, myself, you, Coach J-Row, for you know, and Mono White Border, you know, we all have different goals in mind when we sit down. And going back to a previous episode that you had mentioned, with your Selenia discussion, everyone would potentially have a different Selenia deck with a different goal. The mechanic of the card has not changed, and possibly in this grand scheme of things, I'd say a Selenia deck is maybe a 3 and a 4 on a loudness scale. You know she can do something, but she's not doing something crazy bonkers over the top.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, despite picking the same legend, everyone's going to have a slightly, or even a very bombastic take from each other that kind of skews the loudness scale a bit, because, and this is the thing I want people to think about when we mention this, the loudness scale in theory is not just about your personal feelings of what a card is capable of doing. And there's an example I do want to use from Crimson Vow, from the seeded commander cards. Umbrous Fear Manifest is one of these cards that has recently been a topic of discussion over on Twitter, in that there's sort of this knee-jerk reaction when you read target player exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile a land card. That is pretty fundamentally a strong ability, because it's not just, I don't know, exile the top three cards of your library, like a fixed amount. This could theoretically be a huge chunk of your deck that you're not capable of getting back. That's straight denial resource, and that could scare a lot of people. But when you start looking at the rest of the statistics of the card, we're talking about a base 5 mana 1/1 in black and blue, which is not traditionally known for ramp, and does have a few other exile cards in it. But at the grand scheme of things, I'd probably put the smack dab in the middle. I'd maybe even argue, you know, a 5 or a 6. It's just that people's feelings have pushed this further because of, you know, at the end of the day, their personal feelings of how a game of Magic should go and what kind of strategies are what's the word I'm thinking of? They're just mean, really.
Or acceptable, and, I suppose. Socially acceptable.
Exactly. And the social acceptableness of certain strategies in Commander has been discussed for forever. I'd probably put Mass Land Destruction at the top. You could say Stacks and all this other stuff.
Stacks, Chaos, especially lately. We've seen a lot of people hating on Chaos
and
for things like that.
And at the end of the day, like, I understand your personal feelings, and I, of course, understand my personal feelings. Like, I do not like Umbrous mechanically. I wouldn't want to play against it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to hate someone out of the game, because at the end of the day, despite how strong this type of ability is, the bulk of what could make it scary is still something easily handleable, and you can't let your personal feelings, or perhaps even your fear of facing this, kind of dictate your quote-unquote personal loudness, you know? And this could go on for pretty much any legend that could be coming out in the near future. You know, it's gonna be an endless debate, but you have to remember that you have to sit back a bit and really think about if you're having trouble, sorry, if you're having trouble or problems with dealing with that kind of playstyle or that kind of commander, you know, just kind of sit back and ask yourself why, I guess.
Yeah, so now that I'm reading Umbrus again, it definitely seems to fall under you would like to mill people out if you can, but you don't have to. And you can always just run Nightmare or Horror Tribal too. I mean, it seems like there is a good synergy right there. And again, these are the mill colors, so there are a lot of other options you could run in this deck specifically, or without even running this. So I do agree with you that this isn't exactly a game warping card right here, and the fact that it's $20 right now on TCG Player presale is, I think, quite more than it should be for
I mean,
something that just doesn't scream the value that some of those top EDH rec cards have, where you can just see that they exude those abilities. This definitely feels like something where there's a lot of room for you and I personally to do something completely different. I can see this just being an interesting little tribal commander too.
exactly. And at the end of the day, cards like this are going to be coming out that do cater towards a unfun style of strategy. Now, I understand, again, it's the personal feeling thing. Yes, being stacked a particular way or locked out of the game does feel bad, but at this is a creature. Creatures die, not to Doomblade, not in this case, but you know, they die to kill spells, they die to combat. There's numerous reasons how you would be able to deal with an Umbrus deck, whichever way an individual made it. But you know, there is the, I guess, the your personal loudness scale versus the sort of commander scale at large of, well, you know, if you do see a Derevi deck, you do kind of have a good idea what's going on, but maybe someone's just doing literally bird flying tribal. And this is where, you know, rule zero discussions of, hey, you know, this is kind of my expectation of how I want the game to go, and I'm playing this deck, and this is kind of the gist of it, you know. Not, I don't want to play against Umbrus because I don't want my deck exiled. It's not a realistic, feasible discussion or a reasonable feeling.
Okay, yeah, since we've been talking about Rule Zero so much, Cole, I want to have a que I kind of have a question for you here.
Sure.
So, first part of the question is, what are some of the top cards that you would think are on the loudness scale? What cards for you personally just scream that they could potentially be a problem for you in game just with, you know, the text box that they have? And again, this doesn't necessarily have to go into those quote unquote controversial strategies. This is just if you sit down and someone puts that card down in their command zone across the table, you would be, I guess, most concerned about going into a game.
I mean, I normally don't want to just throw out the, you know, the top 20 of an EDH rec list or something like
Okay,
that,
but
but
something similar to that, maybe?
let me think about this. If you ever see a Rook Thar, you're probably in for a bad time.
Yeah,
Because
don't tell J-Ro that. You know he loves his
well,
Rook-Thar Infect deck there.
but you know, the being you know, having one or two specific, or even just like a bulk of your spells have a penalty, a weight to them that you're on a clock even faster than what you're expecting. You know, you understand the gravity of the situation. Obviously, there's a bunch of factors that put Rook Thar a bit more inaccessible. It's a 6 mana, 6/6. It might end up hurting the player who's playing it. It's vulnerable to counter spells, it's vulnerable to board wipes, and so on and so forth. But there's usually a message that you're in for some pain, and you know, you want to brace yourself for it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one. Rurik Thar is a house. It's hard to deal with that unless you have enough removal to deal with it. Yeah, it's good for a reason.
Yeah, you know, other than that, I mean, I could give you an endless list of legendary creatures that send shivers down my spine, but at the end of the day, it's mostly just from personal experience.
Okay.
And my experience and your experience of legendary creatures that have helmed commander decks before, quite different, you know, for you and I.
Yeah. So that goes into the second part of the question, which you just touched on, actually, is how, again, trying to find a good way to ask this, but trying to, again, the Rule Zero conversation we have, that can allay some of our fears. But I guess what I'm asking, or what I'm going to ask here is, do you think that personal experience is more telling in how loud we can, we personally as an EDH player consider a certain deck, or like the potential of what we could see? Or do you just feel like that potential right there of what someone could have done is more loud? I guess in a different way of asking this is, do you think that loudness comes more from personal experience or just from what you've heard other people talking about or just heard, looked at it on EDH Rec, seen on a website somewhere else? Do you think that really paints our picture of a certain commander differently than our own personal experience?
I mean, okay. This is pretty interesting. Because when I had Sam from the Commander Crunch come on and when he brought it up, we were kind of talking about how Ferja, oh no, I can't remember the full name.
Judge of Valor, out of
Judge of Valor, Ferja, whatever way you want to pronounce it, Judge of Valor, is a very sort of innocuous but still pretty neat legendary creature. And the thing at the end of the day is that how often are you going to be seeing that legend? So I do think popularity does influence people, whether that be you consume a podcast or everyone's clamoring about the new hotness in your forum or even amongst your friends. Like, the popularity, I do think, tends to warp people's perspective more so than just personal experience. But the relationship between personal experience and just simply listening and absorbing what people are saying are kind of tied hand in hand, whether it be one influences the other, someone cracks a commander that was kind of sitting back because a new tool came in, or vice versa. You know, it's a chicken the egg situation. I would probably say popularity influences at least personal experience.
That's fair. And again, a lot of what we as creators and EDH players and just general purveyors of social media, I guess, we see a lot of different things. And again, as you mentioned earlier, the regular player who's going to be going to the local game store who is not plugged into what we would consider our different medium of talking about Magic. And I definitely notice how my own perceptions have changed since I started out on the Bird site. Since I really started to, communicate, commingle with other people who are also playing this format and who in some cases, in a lot of cases, have very similar interests to what I have. So, I mean, that kind of tends to shade my way of thinking, at least. I don't know about for you, Cole, but I know my interests and the way I look at things have definitely changed a lot since I joined. But again, there are just some things about the loudness scale that I think kind of transcend some of the deeper discussions that we've had about these commanders. And that loudness, again, really, I guess, changes our perception of exactly what we're expecting when we sit down at that table. So, now that I've said that, I've got another question for you. What would you consider to be kind of the calling card of a middling card on the loudness scale? Something that's not super scary, something that people have heard of. I guess I just wanted to hear your take on maybe, I guess, the average commander, if we want to utilize the bell curve. What kind of fits that mold of the average commander on a loudness scale to you?
Well, you know what? I'm going to just take a quick look at the top whatever things on EDH Rec, because despite the fact that a lot of these decks are it's a statistics ranking of how many decks there are on the system. When you kind of think about a deck that kind of lands 50% on a scale, I'd almost want to say, I'm thinking of the likes of like Gavi Nestwarden or Torbran Thane of Redfell, you know what they're going to do, and if you don't build the deck like that, it's not going to function well, but it can do some stuff, you know? The only way it registers louder is because you look at a thing like, you look at a card like Torbran, you're like, oh, it deals 2 more damage. Whoa, that's so much. In your head, you're already pushing it further than it's already capable of. But at the end of the day, you know, mono red deck, add a bit of extra damage and punch in there. I'd say it's a little halfway up the scale.
Yeah, because especially with Torbran right there, my friend Ryan actually has a Torbran deck who he, and again, having played against it, I knew exactly what to expect from that deck. I knew what was in there. I wasn't overly afraid of it because, again, he was still working, he was still tinkering with the deck, trying to find what worked for him, trying to figure out what didn't work. So, again, it wasn't one of those decks where it makes you extremely scared, but you knew the potential was there. And I feel like that's a little bit different than if you just sat down. And again, like you just mentioned, if you sit down across from something you've never met before and they have a Torbran deck, you know what that deck's going to do. But I feel like there is multiple ways that deck could go. I feel like, again, and we talk about this a lot in our respective content bit, but there is a constant drive to try to optimize. Again, I've seen that a lot, is that we want to try to push the efficiency of our deck so it does the thing we want to do as often as possible or as quickly as possible, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess that we're just kind of preconceived to believe that whenever we sit down across from said Torbran deck, that is probably going to be the most efficient, the most quote-unquote optimized version that we're ever going to see. This is where Rule Zero comes in. But I guess that we just kind of expect that people have decided to go with the most powerful cards. You could go with the Torbran deck that we would consider extremely oppressive. There are a lot of red burn spells, a lot of enchantments that can just do a ton of damage. Doubling damage, tripling damage, etc., etc. The list just goes on. Or you could just have a Torbran deck that's just running a whole bunch of common shock-like effects, too. That is still overly powerful. Or it can be powerful, but again, doesn't do things the exact same way, I suppose. So it's just interesting how we always think that, and we always are afraid that a deck is going to be the most powerful version, and, you know, that's not always the case. But that's where the loudness comes in, is that we see that +2 damage, we assume, hey, this is going to be a fairly painful game for me, I'm going to have to do X to try to deal with it, where it may not be that at all. But again, just sitting down and seeing that, Torbran just screams, I'm going to do damage, and we just expect, we brace ourselves for impact. When we see a Rurik Thar deck, we know that we have to probably deal with that or else we're going to get destroyed by a giant troll or a giant orc, I suppose. And we just kind of know what we're going to get. It's just, what flavor of that are you going to get? And I think that's kind of the question when it comes to loudness, is what flavor are you going to get of this particular commander? Just that some are, in the way I look at it, are more typical to have certain strategies that are going to be more powerful than others. Is that fair to say?
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, there's really not much more to say. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a combination of things that are going to make you feel a certain way when you see something, but often reality and also the interpersonal social relationship of not just yourself, but 3 other people, like, can change and warp your perspective of how that game is going to go.
Mm-hmm. And since we've talked about high loudness and medium loudness, Cole, I just wanted to get your take specifically on what you would consider to be a low loudness commander. I mean, I know we've talked about Renata, but since we kind of need to define these, how would you describe a low loudness commander, and does that necessarily mean that they effectively have to be, as I would consider, unloved on EDH rec? Could there be popular commanders who just don't scream kill me on sight, I suppose, as I've heard other creators say?
I mean, I would say the entire catalog of my podcast is an example, but that's not true, because something like Sir Conrad or something like that has a loudness to it and is fairly popular. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Peter. I gotta say, it's Terra Nika, a Crowan veteran, isn't it? As a prime example, we're talking about a creature that's a 3-mana, 3/3 with vigilance that makes another creature a 4/4 and gain indestructible. And when you kind of look at that, well, you're like, oh, well, it has to attack, and it's just a white creature. It's not very exciting. And then you have someone like Peter who would, on his side of things, despite that sort of low, I don't know, he's just kind of sneaking around, you know? You don't know what he's up to, and you don't really think about it too much until you have some crazy indestructible 4/4 that's going to be hitting you, possibly for maybe double strike or an unexpected boost of power you don't see coming. It just flies under the radar.
So you would, and you and I would effectively define a low loudness commander as something where most people are not even going to bat an eye at. They're probably going to ask you what your commander does.
Oh,
I feel like this a lot with Kotha-Fed, Soul Hoarder. Again, I know I talk about him way too much on this podcast, but I love that deck. And the fact that people don't know what the ability is, and it doesn't sound generically powerful, I suppose. But when you get into the game, people are always surprised to just see how many cards I'm able to draw. And I mean, I'm skirting death the whole time. I just died the other night to my own commander. But you know, there are worse ways to go, honestly, in a game of EDH. But I just feel like sometimes when you see those commanders, and I do try to capitalize this on a lot if I can with some of my more recent builds, is that you can easily sneak things by under the guise of a quote unquote weak commander. I know you and I have talked a lot about the new Odric coming out in Crimson
Oh,
Vow. Again,
boy.
and you and I came out with completely different deck lists for what we were thinking of, but you and I are in agreement that this commander is extremely underrated. Most people seem, from what I understand, the LGS scene, or at least, you know, from what I got just playing my local LGS, most people seem to hate Boros. Most people seem to hate the new Odric. Most people seem to hate the new Boros Odric. Well, you and I look at it differently. A lot of people would say, well, that's low loudness. This card sucks, right? You and I say, well, not so fast. There are some interesting synergies here. We differ on what exactly we'd want to do with those synergies, but we say, well, just like with Terranika, hey, we have opportunity here. Blood tokens, what can we do with those things? What has synergies with that? You kind of leaned in your list into some vampire tribal synergies as well. I lean more into the artifact synergies, but again, we come at it from two different ways, but we see this card as having far more upside than most people do. I guess I'm really not sure exactly how loudness and potential and a floor ceiling really come into play, because I feel like personally, and again, stop me if I'm kind of repeating myself here, but I feel like loudness, at least to me, feels like you probably have an extremely high ceiling and a high floor. I suppose that this is what I mean by having the high value commanders, is that this is they have an extremely high floor because it's very hard to quote unquote build them badly. I really had to work really hard to make Nigella powered down to not hopefully not be able to just bust games open of casual EDH, because it's really hard to bring that power down. Nigella is just that dang powerful.
All everything she needs is fundamentally built in to the kit, and it's just you just keep turning them sideways, and you're just gonna eventually have an infinite army that beats everyone down just by a bunch of warrior tokens. And that's and you are right. I would definitely say the theoretical ceiling and floor, if it's really high from the start and out the gate, then yes, obviously on the loudness scale it goes higher. I think you and I do function. We like the mental gymnastics of taking a very low, like 6 feet under for the floorboards, and then a pretty decent high ceiling legends that most people just disregard completely because the floor is so low. You might as well just be sitting on a patch of dirt for some people's perspective, which is why, yeah, Odric Blood Curse is definitely one of the things that I know it's definitely low on the loudness scale. It's nothing flashy. People are going to be disregarding it. I think there's something super exciting waiting here, and I just think it's going to be super fun. And at the end of the day, the goal is fun. I just want you guys to turn your heads and look in awe as, myself and a handful of other people over on Twitter who have been ranting and raving about this beloved character. do some pretty cool stuff. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that in about 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'll end up building the Audric deck that I showed you, showed Peter, et cetera, et cetera. But I do agree that Audric is going to be at least my sleeper pick in this set for just, you know, having that kind of value. You have to jump through a couple of extra hoops, but we enjoy that.
And for some people,
challenging perceptions and just trying to say, hey, this card doesn't suck. It's just not Chulainn, you know? It's not these things that are just saying, draw a card, do this, and you get another trigger. It's, hey, you have to
value.
You have to do this, and this to be able to get here, but if I get here, I can do something cool, and that's why we're drawn to it.
You've got, if you know, everyone's, again, and going back into the social element of us as people, as individuals and people coming together to play a very fun multiplayer format, it's also the stories we get to share when someone does bring down their powered down super bonkers commander deck, and when someone brings their really tuned up deck that has a really not so great legendary creature at the helm. It's, you know, loudness scale aside, that's all what we're here for, is to play a really cool game of Magic with some really cool characters and fun decks.
Mm-hmm. And again, that it really depends on what you as the player are interested in looking for. But I think the moral of this episode is, don't sleep on Cole's and I's decks. We're purposely trying to hide behind a shell of innocence, and then we're going to try to wreck your conceptions and your misconceptions as well as much as we possibly can, utilizing quote-unquote unplayable jank.
Yeah, so if I'm telling you I'm doing nothing, don't believe me.
Yeah, that's not scary at all. I'm come to learn that whenever Peter stays silent, he is secretly planning to kill everybody. So, Peter, we love you. I'm not being mean here. We really enjoy being your friend.
You're sitting on a doom scar. Everyone knows it.
Oh, yeah. Peter's great for doing that sort of thing. But yeah, we've got a great little group, I think, here of like-minded people. But yeah, the loudness scale, just to wrap things up, I really do think we're in agreement here, is that loudness can just be popularity. Loudness can be the possibilities. So basically what is possible in the text box, the value, and then just again, ceiling to floor. What are most people's conceptions of that ceiling? How low do you think that deck can feasibly go without, you know, just throwing 99 random cards in a pile? And kind of just looking at maybe some commanders that we enjoy personally don't necessarily seem scary, and that's why we sometimes choose them, or they force us to go in a different direction versus commanders that I have where they're very loud and people always ask, well, are you doing this certain thing? I can't tell you how many times people have asked about my Anja Falconrath deck. You know, am I playing World Gorger Dragon? Just no, I am doing a weird reanimator deck. It doesn't, without World Gorger Dragon. And it's a different conversation. Sometimes you have to really tell people it's not that deck. And I think that's kind of the big thing that we're getting out of here, is you can build that deck, but you don't have to. But no matter what you do, that loudness kind of speaks for the commander, and people will have preconceived notions about that. Again, I know I've talked about this, but this is why I stopped playing Kess Dissonant Mage. Was because of preconceived notions. I wasn't doing the thing that Kess does, but other people have played against it. They thought I was doing that, so they picked on me. And it's not a great feeling when you run into that sort of situation. Have you run into anything like that before, Cole, with any of these more popular commanders?
I'm trying to think about my personal experience between two different play groups, and my oldest one, I would say that there's been a few times that a combination of things of playing Animar, Soul of Elements, for example. Mm-hmm. That was one of my strongest decks back around, I'd say, 2011, 2012, or 2013 even. So definitely got hated out of the game a few times because people knew what was coming and what exactly the deck could do. And so, and I guess, kind of, this is the thing that people need to understand that hating someone out of a game because of a very good, strong strategy, understandable. But you also have to realize that this is something that's been coming up on Twitter too, is that you have to understand that there are consequences to those actions, and not just from an in-the-game moment standpoint of, oh, well, if you do overly commit to the one person, that you might end up losing the game in the grand scheme of things, whether or not that's something you care about highly or not. But, you know, the player in particular might become discouraged, and if you actively attempt to punish them for choosing to play a deck like that, I think you, loudness scale aside, or even, you know, completely separate from this discussion, that you need to kind of reassess how you are handling that preconceived notion. It's understandable, but if you do it consistently, then you might have to reassess how you're interacting with that deck and that player.
And again, we're not talking about trying to go after someone because you're afraid of what their deck is going to do for like one game. You know, I when I typically have the ability to, you know, in a Voltron deck, I'm probably going to go after the person who seems the most the scariest at that point. You know, who can I get in damage with? Who's probably going to be able to hurt me the most? But again, that's kind of a game thing that has nothing as much to really do with the commander, I guess. It's when you start kind of gunning for the commander where it starts becoming the problem, I'd say. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so it ends up coming down to, is it a strategy where you're trying to, because again, we're trying to win EDH, you know, if we can. I mean, obviously, that's not the only reason why we play, but ultimately at the end of the game, most of the time, we are trying to at least be competitive in the game, you know, whether it's Battlecruiser, whether it's High Power or CDH, etc. We're trying to interact with the game. And sometimes we have the ability to take a player or two players out of the game. But yeah, if you're focusing on someone for the commander, like, you know, like with my Kess deck, is that a couple of the players in that pod were gunning directly for me because of who I had in the command zone. That experience made me tear that deck apart, and I've never just thought about putting it back in just because I had that bad experience. And it's like, I don't want to do this again because it sucks. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It sucks to basically have your commander hated out because I was a new player. I just had a bunch of fun little mill cards.
See, and again, like this is the other thing too. Like you said, it's one thing when you're an experienced player, whether that be, and whatever you want to consider that, be like you played for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years. Like I'm on the 10-year scale, and it's like if people know that I play a certain deck and I'm a decent Magic player, then perhaps gunning for me is the good choice. But if you're playing against, you know, like you said, a year into playing Magic version of you, MJ, then it's a completely different thing, and that's the type of thing where you do need to take care of your interaction with people and how you choose to play the game. And at the end of the day, I mean, I can't exactly stop people from playing what most people would consider to be socially unacceptable strategies in a card game, but just because I don't play it doesn't mean no one else should. And if you're hating someone out of a game because of this preconceived loudness of a particular commander, irregardless of like the nuances and the context of like the game, the player, the pod, the environment, you know, personal LGS with random people, your own personal playgroup, Discord servers, so on, you know, there's a lot of factors to consider. It's pretty complicated.
Yeah, so ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it's, you can have your opinions of a commander. You can be afraid. It's okay to be afraid of what a commander can do. But make your in-game decisions about the card, not the player, I think is where we're going with this. Is that this could be someone's very first deck and they have a very powerful commander. You know, yeah. Just a lot of those kinds of commanders are very popular, very easy to pick up because they just exude that same kind of value. This is why we get a lot of the precons have the most popular commanders on EDH Rec, because they're just generically good.
I mean, heck, Prosper, Oscar, heck, I'd even say Sir Gwyn, even if most people don't necessarily rate it super powerfully. Lathril, the list goes on, especially of the last, I'd say, year's worth of Commander decks. Like, they've been home runs of just simply good build-around creatures that you could take in quite a few different directions, but they just they lend to good play, and they lend to a good deck. So I definitely could see why a lot of these are endlessly popular. They're going to be endlessly popular as long as we play Commander. And hey, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, now that we've talked about the Latin scale, I want to thank you so much, Cole, for being on the episode here today. It's been great having you, and I think we really touched on a lot of really good topics here in regards to just loudness of commanders, efficiency, and just, you know, general good housekeeping and Rule Zero conversations.
Yeah, I think, and you know, at the end of the day, whether listeners take this by heart or, you know, don't really listen, at the end of the day, this stuff is purely contextual and subjective, and just, you know, take that to heart. It's a game. We're supposed to have fun.
And remember to always be nice to everyone else you're playing with, if at all possible.
And, you know, if you do get salty,
it's okay to walk away at that point.
Take a walk, go home for the day, and rinse and repeat, you know. It's at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world.
And again, where it's also okay to be afraid of certain commanders. I mean, I know that a lot of these top commanders will be very difficult games. So maybe this is why I have multiple decks, is maybe the one I would want to play can't match up. So I could politely ask, hey, you know, my deck doesn't have this capability and I really want to play it. Can we play something different? Or I can go the opposite way and say, hey, I have a different deck that I feel is a better matchup. How about I just switch to that? And that, again, that's just the good thing about having a range of decks, if possible, at least, because then it allows for a better experience for everybody. All right. Again, Cole, before I let you go, can you remind the fine folks out there where they can find your content and the Uncommon Commanders podcast?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Eclipse Meteor. One word, exactly as you think it'd be spelled, Eclipse Meteor. You can find the Uncommon podcast over on Anchor, which there's a link of it on my Twitter, but also it's provided at other podcasts such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Breaker. I don't know. They're around. People listen all over. I'm not entirely sure where they're coming from.
Yeah, I get the same thing too, but I know people are listening and I appreciate everyone who listens to this. Y'all make this worth it, and this is the reason why I podcast. It's great to be able to just talk about cool things with cool people and just be able to share the love of this weird and wacky card game that we all play. And you can find the entire back catalog of the MTG and Quarantine podcast on those same podcast outlets. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. And again, before I end today's episode, I'd like to give another huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who've supported me over at patreon.com/MTG in Quarantine. So thank you to Mr. Breakbence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S. and Infamous Fridge for supporting me. If you'd like to help support me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTG in Quarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.